I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You never stop learning as a parent, which is why for me, in addition to hosting this podcast, I also love to listen to what else is out there, including a podcast called Stroller Coaster, a new show created by Munchkin, which is on a mission to be the most loved baby brand in the world. And like this podcast, it's for parents of kids of all ages. Stroller Coaster is hosted by Lynn Smith, a news anchor for CNN and NBC, and also a mother of two. Lynn brings a fun, energetic vibe to the show. She talks to experts, shares her own personal stories, and brings you confessions from listeners on topics like screen time, what it's really been like to manage school at home, and something we all struggle with, bedtime and sleep. The show is super relatable. I know our listeners are going to love it. So check out this new podcast and subscribe to Stroller Coaster today. I was 6 weeks postpartum with my second child when I was a finalist for a really cool journalism fellowship out at Stanford. I was really passionate about the project I was pitching, but I had other things on my mind, and I showed up as prepared as I thought that I could be for this interview. I absolutely bombed this interview. I couldn't put together a coherent sentence. I was so incredibly nervous. And towards the very end, I think the last question they asked me was, "What do you do for fun?" And to be honest, I had prepared all kinds of responses for this interview. I prepared my budget for the project. I prepared the potential partners. I had a great reason why I wanted to do this project. I did not prepare for them asking me, "What do you do for fun?" And I thought, okay, I have a 19-month-old toddler. I have a 6-week-old. I have a full-time job. And they want to know, what do I do for fun? And I don't do anything for fun, was the real answer. I was so taken aback, I could barely speak, and I just talked about what I used to do for fun. That was an honest answer, but it absolutely rocked me to be asked, "What do I do for fun?" That was 8 years ago, and I am still sort of haunted by this question. Fun is something that I am not good at. I'm good at work, I'm good at being a mom, I'm pretty good at running a house, but fun is hard. Fun is never on my to-do list, and I have to try really hard to be fun. And I'm like kind of the place where fun goes to die. It's something I'm working on. I'm being honest here with you on the podcast about it. Moms need to prioritize fun for themselves, not just for their kids. My project for this year is having fun without guilt, and I hope this episode gives you permission to prioritize fun in whatever way feels good to you. Hey mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I'm Liz Tennedy, the co-founder here at Motherly, and I'm also a mother of four myself. Today's guest is Eve Rodsky. She is the New York Times bestselling author of Fair Play, which is a life management system that really helps partners, but frankly, especially women and mothers, adjust the domestic workload so that it is more fair and balanced. She's also the host of a new podcast that I know you're going to want to tune into, Time Out, a Fair Play podcast. Eve's work has really been instrumental in amplifying the cultural conversation about unpaid labor, the work that mothers and women do in our families, and how to make that more equitable. And her frameworks have been used by thousands of mothers and families to rebalance their relationships. So in our conversation, Eve shares her own personal journey and realizing that the division of labor in her relationship really needed to change. She's got a great story about blueberries that I totally related to. I think you will as well. We also discuss what she learned about the importance of boundaries and communication, the power of what we pay attention to, and the reasons why work flexibility can be a double-edged sword. So important. And finally, we talk all about her new book, which is called Find Your Unicorn Space, which is about how each of us can carve out this protected, beautiful, creative space that allows us to have fun in the midst of very busy lives. Eve Rodsky, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Liz, I'm really, really happy to be here. We hadn't met before, but our communities are so aligned in our messaging. And so I'm just bursting with happiness to finally get to meet you.
Thanks for joining us. So I always like to start with reflecting on who we are as women before and after motherhood. So I'm curious for you, when you think back to first-time motherhood, what about it surprised you?
Well, I think what surprised me, Liz, was the complete erasure of Eve Rodsky, or Eve Madison at the time. I had already erased, I guess, the Madison because I didn't really think about what it was like to lose my name. But what I think about in the transition to motherhood is right after Zach, who's 13, my first son, was given to me. I remember that was the first time where someone didn't use my name. I remember the labor and delivery nurse, she handed me Zach and said, you know, hi, mom. And then I remember I had a friend, because those charms were really in. I had a friend come to me at the hospital that week, and she gave me a mom necklace, and I remember putting that on proudly. And then cut to being in my son's toddler transition program, where, of course, it was all mothers and a couple of gay fathers, because God forbid they would ask fathers to be there. And so I'm sitting around this group, and I remember I'm wearing this name tag, and the name tag said Zach's mom. And this preschool teacher says, look around. You're going to be with these people for 10 years. These are going to be your best friends in the entire world. They're going to know you better than anyone. And we're sort of looking around and sort of awkwardly smiling at each other. And I have Zach, you know, sort of bouncing in my lap. And then I remember thinking, wait, these are the people who are going to know me better than anybody else in the world. They don't even know my name. And that was my transition to parenthood, understanding that once I became a mother, it was societally acceptable and actually more societally preferable for me to lose myself in my identities as a parent and or partner and or professional and lose my name as well.
When did you become conscious of that? Your oldest is a teenager. Even 15 years ago, 10 years ago, parenting culture was a bit different. So like what part of this journey for you did you realize, I have been consumed by this identity and I'm not happy?
Well, we didn't have motherly back then, so I'm sad I didn't. 13, almost 14 years ago was a different culture. What to expect when you're expecting was, you know, all I knew was that my child was supposed to be a jelly bean. I don't really know if I learned anything else about that book. I certainly didn't know how to ask for what I needed or to understand that 2/3 or more of what it took to run a home and family was going to fall on me. There was a lot of surprise in the transition to motherhood for me. But when I look back at these awakening moments, I think of my mother often, she's a single mother. She's a professor now of social work, but she was fighting for her PhD at the time when I was born. As a professor of social work and social change, she often says the way to change is really pre-consciousness to consciousness and then the fight for solutions, right, in your own life and society.
Absolutely.
So you're right. Growing from pre-consciousness to consciousness is a very triggering thing to do, because if you don't have the fight for the solutions, then what's the point often of being conscious? They say ignorance is bliss. So I would say for me, it was an understanding that when I was 21, I was going to be president and senator. I promise you, Liz, I thought I could do both because you can legislate till four and you can issue your executive orders at night. But I was never going to give up my dream of being a Knicks City dancer because, duh, you can just fly Air Force One in on Saturdays and do the 12:30 game. And then you can fly out and then you can get ready for your state dinners in the airplane. It's a private plane, right? I was bursting with ideas. I was bursting with creative energy. I was bursting with society telling me I could be anything as a woman. And then realizing, I think it was 13 years later, because Zach was around three at the time, the realizations that everything I'd been told, I'd been sold a lie. That basically I had 10 years left to live until I was going to be defined by my roles and my dreams would be erased. Nobody's asking me about me anymore. And I think if you're not aware that this is coming, then it can subsume you. You can get confused, gaslighted, hurt, feel lonely, feel like it's only happening to you. And I never want that to happen. I think that's why motherly is so beautiful. It's this understanding that there's a communal experience out there. And while it may look different for everybody, there are some things that are universal truths.
We are living through that conscious awakening of women just identifying and peeling back all the layers of the ways that we've been programmed. Even things like, how do we use our language? Learning to say, thanks for your patience versus, oh, I'm so sorry that I'm late. Those kinds of things. So that's a work in progress, right? So it's why you're writing books. It's why we're talking today. So you wrote a best-selling book already called Fair Play, a new book just out called Find Your Unicorn Space. I read both and I've been reflecting on what ended up to me seeming like one of the common themes, which is that we don't value women's time in our culture and women don't value their own time. And then you add the responsibilities of motherhood and there is a crisis of mothers and our time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, thank you. That's such a beautiful way of distilling it. I think we are literally in a time crisis. And what I mean by that is not that, oh, society has made us too busy. What I mean by that is that we have exposed finally a dirty little secret that has been fueling the world's economies. But I'll talk just America specifically. We have literally built our homes, the foundation of America, on the backs of the unpaid labor of women. And that is just not a sustainable foundation of any house. It is crumbling. It is crumbling under individual burnout, but also the realization that we have no safety nets. We don't live in a bouncy house. It's like throwing your kids and being like, have fun, and throwing them out a freaking window onto a concrete floor as opposed to letting them jump in a bouncy house. We are in a place where, especially since the Industrial Revolution, we have basically said to men, we will guard your time as if it's finite like diamonds, and we will insist that women treat their time as if it's infinite like sand. This is not just Eve talking. The data shows us that if women enter a male profession, salaries automatically go down. We say things to women like breastfeeding is free when it's an 1800 hour a year full-time job. We then start to internalize the devaluing of our time. And I will ask your listeners, have you ever said to yourself, I do more unpaid labor and childcare because my partner makes more money than me, or because my job is more flexible, or because in the time it takes to tell him, her, they what to do, I should do it myself, or because I'm a better multitasker, I'm wired differently for care, or because I can find the time. If you've ever said any one of those things to yourself, that's a toxic time message. They are fundamentally untrue. Because at the end of the day, we just get 24 hours in a day. And the more we devalue our own time, we become what I like to say, CIYOO, complicit in your own oppression. And for years, Liz, I was complicit in my own oppression. I guarded Seth's time as if it was the biggest, nicest diamond that ever existed. I never in a million years would have thought to ask him to give up his workout in the morning or to go to work late. I gave up my corporate job or I was forced out. I built my own practice. I started later so I could drop my kids off at school. Always thinking it was my problem. Never in a million years thinking that Seth would be the one to pick up the pediatrician's call when my kid was sick. For me, the change in my life came from the darkest days. And I think that's the other good thing to understand is that sometimes your lived experiences, whether they're good or bad, they inform what you do next. It's called regeneration. That idea that you can use hard times to regenerate is linked to mental and physical health. So I did regenerate. I sort of became a phoenix from the ashes. I never returned to the Knick City Dancer president, Liz.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I just want to get, you know, some of the points of your first best-selling book, Fair Play, out. So can you walk us through what happened and how that ended up launching just this massive movement around Fair Play?
The preschool day was one that triggers me for Unicorn Space. But the ultimate day that really did change my life was this day that my first book, Fair Play, sort of starts with this blueberries breakdown. My husband's sending me a text that says, I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries. This was the scene, because I think a lot of your listeners can relate. I'm already texting and driving because I'm late to pick up Zach at that toddler transition program. I'm the one tasked to pick him up, of course, because I didn't even think to ask Seth to take on any of those responsibilities at the time. I'd left my new baby at home, Ben. I had gifts for the newborn baby in the backseat of my car that I was supposed to return. I had a breast pump in the passenger seat of my car. I had a diaper bag in the passenger seat of my car. I had a client contract in my lap because I'd started my own firm. And I remember that day because as Seth is sending me that, I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries text, and I'm getting my heart starting to pound, I remember that as my heart was pounding, I was hitting stop signs, and the pen that was in between my legs to help mark up this contract for my new firm was sort of backing up and stabbing me in the vagina. And so I just have this vision of that day of just being stabbed in the vagina by a pen amidst this whirling amount of chaos to the point where I stopped. I stopped on the side of the road. We live in LA. We don't take traffic lightly here. For me to be late to pick up Zach, something had to be so fundamentally wrong. And what I was thinking that day was, not only was the surprise that I didn't have the career marriage combo, Liz, that I thought I was going to have, and not only that I was being defined by all these unpaid labor tasks, including being the fulfiller of Seth's smoothie needs, but that how could this happen to me? There was also a blaming and shaming that I had created this, that somehow I didn't fight hard enough for myself or my career. I have a single mother, as I said, who used me as a parental child. So I was more like her partner. I filled out her checks. I would turn in our rent on time so we wouldn't get eviction notices. I was in charge of letting her know my brother couldn't read in seventh grade and filling out SSD applications, that's Social Security Disability for him. So I didn't want that life. I wanted an equal partner. I wanted a safety net of somebody to live with who would be an equal partner, Liz. And on top of it, I'm a Harvard-trained mediator. That's the funny part. I'm literally trained in difficult conversations. And still, instead of speaking to Seth, articulating this, understanding this was happening to me, I still ended up alone on the side of the road, completely isolated, feeling like I had nobody I could talk to, and feeling like ultimately it was my fault. And that was it. That was the day my eyes opened and I started to see around me that maybe this wasn't just my problem.
Thank you for getting to consciousness. I'm sorry for Seth. I'm sorry about the blueberries. It's been quite a journey since then. It sounds like after you came to consciousness about just your participation in it, you were able to use these negotiating mediator skills to really set for your own marriage a way of finding fairness in the heavy burden of parenting, and not just heavy burden of parenting, parenting in a time when we are really renegotiating things. So for those listeners who realize the mental load of motherhood is too great, what are the steps to have a really constructive conversation and action on how to make things more fair for her, for our listeners?
Well, here's the great news. There's actually a secret formula. And it's a practice. And remember, I acknowledge we're breathing polluted air. So I just established a Fair Play Policy Institute. I am joining the good fight for paid leave and access to universal childcare and the things we need to make it easier for all caregivers. But in the moment that we're in, we still have to breathe that polluted air. We have to breathe. We can't suffocate. And so the non-suffocating formula is three things. It's boundaries, systems, and communication. When you have those three things in play, and I know this because we had 75 couples that we specifically followed for a documentary through the pandemic, and the ones with those three things were thriving.
Can you talk about those three? I think they're really important. And I'm hearing you say that and I'm thinking, okay, we've gotten better at boundaries. Systems, we're still a hot mess. Communication, we're great.
By the way, two out of three is great. If you don't have any of them, then it's going to be bad, you know? And that's where I was in that blueberries breakdown. So let's talk about all three.
Yeah, let's talk about all three.
So boundaries we did already. We spent the first, 15 minutes breaking down this idea that women's time is worthless, right? It's infinite, it's sand. The boundary is not a walk around the block. A boundary is not a drink with a friend. A boundary, and this is what I explore in the whole second book of Unicorn Space, a boundary is being interested in your own life. That's what a boundary is.
I mean, your own life, meaning not your partner, not your kids, not your job, you.
You. Mm-hmm. And that is hard to separate out when we've been defined by our roles for so long, because being interested in your own life, a lot of people in the beginning of the Fair Play data would say, I am. I just went to my son's basketball game. And I said, no, that's interested in your son's life. And that's great. That's awesome. But that is not what I'm talking about. Or, I'm pretty fulfilled in my work. I'm like, that's awesome. But that's your role as a worker. I'm talking about being interested in your own life outside being a partner and or parent and or professional. And that's why I do have a little bit of an issue with the word fun. And I have an issue with the word passion. And I have an issue with the word hobby. I really like the idea of a unicorn space, because this idea that a boundary is a space, that you're taking up space, but you know that that space is mythical. It can be magical, but it doesn't exist like a unicorn unless you really can claim it. I wouldn't necessarily call myself fun, Liz, but I will call myself somebody who now has a lot of dreams and creativity and iterates, because I believe in this idea of unicorn space. So that's a boundary, being interested in your own life. And society doesn't want you to do that. That means that you have to believe your time is diamonds, that you deserve as much time choice as your partner. So boundaries is really the self-talk part of communication. It's understanding that I was able to finally say to Seth, hey, you get 4 hours after our kids go to bed to check SportsCenter and work out and finish a PowerPoint deck, whereas I'm using all my time in service of our household until my head hits the pillow. And that's 2 hours later after your head hits the pillow. And that's fundamentally unfair. And I'm not going to live like that anymore. I deserve as much time choice as you, Seth. So that took a lot of power and patience.
So it sounds like the boundaries part is about you setting up boundaries for the world around you. Is systems and communication more about how you negotiate that and navigate that with your partner and family?
Correct. So boundaries is all about, this is the hard part. I wish I could just put the Fair Play game next to Cards Against Humanity and say, go play. But it doesn't work that way. Most people say, I wouldn't even know how to approach this topic. So systems and communication go hand in hand. And what I will say, the best thing you can do is understand two things. One thing I can tell you about systems is that everything you'll know about the Fair Play system, you can find out by asking this question, because I asked it in 17 countries. How did mustard get in your refrigerator? It's such a good question, because it dovetails off the most important question of Fair Play, which is what would happen if we treated our homes as our most important organizations, not corporations, which some people think I'm saying. I don't want to equate it with a capitalist patriarchy. An organization is the way you and people interact over and over again in a sphere, in a group. So that organization that is our home, one man said to me, oh, you mean Eve, like, when me and my partner, we wait to decide who's taking the dog out, right? When it's about to take a piss on the rug. And I said, yeah, that, but whatever that is, but the opposite. So that, but the exact opposite. And a system relies on the fact that decisions are already made for you. You know who's taking the dog out, because Tuesdays is your partner's dog day. It is the idea that mustard gets in your refrigerator through three steps. The conception that you know that your second son, Johnny, likes mustard because otherwise he won't eat his protein. We get paid big bucks for conception in the business world, new ideas. Then there's the monitoring the mustard for when it runs low and getting stakeholder buy-in for what everybody else needs in the grocery list. That is called planning. Again, big bucks are usually paid for that. And then there's the execution. You can go to the store. And that's often where the biggest Fair Play systems fail is. that women are holding the conception and planning, but then they send their partners to the store for the mustard, and then their partners bring home spicy Dijon every time. And then women will say to me, well, how am I going to trust my husband with my living will, Eve? He can't even bring home the right type of mustard. And that swirling accountability and trust loss in the organization is ultimately why we end up in divorce, in resentment. We need accountability and trust in our organizations.
And that's what communication is, because that is it. We have that's to it. Be able to hear the feedback and absorb the feedback and act on the feedback. And it goes both ways for sure. You've given me some tools to work with around home life, but what I'm so excited to talk to you about is the unicorn space, which I know it's not magical, but it does sound magical. And when people hear you describe it, I'm sure, especially 2-3 years into a pandemic, mothers are like, oh yeah, I need that. So what is finding your unicorn space? Why is it so critical for mothers, especially at a time of heavy burden?
This book has 12 expert disciplines in it, because at the end of the day, what we found is that creativity, and how I redefine it, as unicorn space, which is the active pursuits of things that make you come alive. That unicorn space, having the metaphorical and or physical space for that, is linked to daily flourishing. Now, why that's important, and I'm going to nerd out with you for a little bit, Liz, because I see you go deep with your guests. There is happiness without meaning. That is what a lot of us have gone to in the pandemic. I get it. Hedonistic well-being for me is just sugar. I'm going for my physical today. And I'm actually pretty sure that I'm going to be diagnosed as pre-diabetic. I mean, that's in my family. I've lived on just sugar for the past 2 years. I get it. Then there's meaning without happiness. And for me, and what the data shows, is that that's often associated with caregiving. I don't think women are at loss for existential meaning, but it's not linked to that type of daily flourishing. People in their daily happiness studies would rather be at a root canal than hang out with their toddler. And by people, I mean Eve. You know, I identify with that. Anna, I love you, but I would rather be sleeping on my dentist chair than hang out with you. And so it is this intersection of happiness and meaning that unicorn space occupies. This idea that we need these experiences as our armor, as our umbrella from the rain. So I'll just give you one quick example of this woman, Kat Medina, that I met, that I put her in the book, because she so exemplifies what I mean by this armor. So her husband hears her reading to her son one night and says, you know, I just downloaded Audible, and, you know, people do this for a living. They read books for a living. She works at Sam's Club as a cashier. Her husband's an auto mechanic, super busy, raising their son, just trying to get by. And then he says this to her. And then serendipitously at Sam's Club with her employee discount, there's a microphone on sale. So she buys the microphone, borrows her husband's laptop, reads Princesses Behaving Badly, a book she had in her house, and uploads it. A week later, she gets booked as her first audiobook narration. She calls her mom. She said it's the best thing that ever happened to her. She's having this great time. And then shortly after that, she gets a tattoo on her arm that says, reading books is like breathing air. And her mother's like, hold your horses. Like, you've read like one book. Like, what is wrong with you? And her point, which aligns so perfectly with the data, Liz, is that I don't care if I ever read another audiobook. That audiobook that I did can never be taken away from me. That experience can never be taken away from me. And I've recognized that happiness and meaning experiences. I was writing her chapter the same day. I remember Anna takes her foot, swirls me around with some LOL doll, smashes me in the eye. I get this giant black eye. And I remember thinking to myself, you know what? Writing this morning was my armor for dealing with this black eye tonight. Because there has to be these experiences that shelter us, because it's going to keep raining.
And a big thing you talk about in Find Your Unicorn Space is how in motherhood, it feels like there are no boundaries with our time, with our space, with our bodies. The only one who can carve out those unicorn spaces is us. I'm hoping you can list off a few unicorn spaces of people in your community to really start to inspire our listeners of what this could mean for them.
Can we play a game?
Sure, let's do it.
I will read off these unicorn space ideas, and then I want to know what resonates with you just off the top of your head. This is not your actual unicorn space. As we said, these are iterative. This is just to get inspired.
Yeah.
But then I will remix one card with your card based on what you tell me. So I'm going to read you some and you tell me just what resonates with you. Design, performing, travel and culture, racing, rhetoric, that's speech, debate, and politics, martial arts, dance, outdoors, water sports, storytelling, genealogy and lineage, spiritual wellness, otherworldly pursuits, tarot, astrology, magic, painting, planting, art, music, stitching and needles, woodworking, axe throwing, baking, photography, florals, pottery, beauty, games, coding, teaching, researching and learning, finding and foraging, and or event planning. So tell me which card stood out for you.
So beauty has been on my mind for months. I'm noticing that creating beauty, that makes me feel so alive. And it doesn't have a purpose in a way that I can say, like, how do you monetize it? But it's just makes me feel alive. And like, it's a piece of me that's missing.
But I love what you just did, because I almost think you did it on purpose, where you had to qualify your love of something beauty by saying, but it doesn't have a purpose because I can't monetize it. That's what we do.
Yes.
Anybody that I know who, even when they pick a card now, there's always a qualifier. Well, I would love it, but I'm not sure what I would do with it. There's some sort of qualifier, because we're actually not used to talking about things that we would do just for us.
Right. You brought up, we live in capitalism, this era where art time is precious. So for me, I'm like, okay, well, how would I make money doing that? Well, that's not the point.
No,
here.
No, it's definitely not the point. So tell me, I want to hear more about it. Tell me though, give me a beauty story.
Today I bought myself flowers, and not just any flowers. I ordered from a company that I really, really love. Typically a friend will get me these flowers for my birthday, and I like arranging them and the vase, and maybe I break it up in different rooms. Flowers for me are very poetic and I love them.
So I'm going to pitch something to you. And again, if we had more people, you'd get more pitches. But I'm actually going to combine pottery with your love of beauty and florals, because I think it could be really fun to take a class. And I don't mean just Color Me Mine, where you just paint it. Actually taking a pottery class or going to a pottery studio and making a vase that you make beautiful, that you make in the glaze colors you love. And then you put special flowers in there to remind you that you love beauty and that's your reminder to yourself every day.
I love it completely. And thank you for giving me permission to spend my own time. It's been on my mind, but I haven't done it yet, which I'm sure is a common theme.
By the way, that gets to this framework. You know, we have a secret formula for thriving in the home, boundary systems and communication. But the secret formula for creative thriving that happens in the second part of the book is about the secret formula of curiosity plus connection plus completion. Now, in your unicorn space podcasting world, you've iterated in that circle and cycle many times. So that's a robust unicorn space. In a more nascent unicorn space, like your love of floral arranging, you may just be in the nascent phase of curiosity. So maybe it's literally you go to your local bookstore or Barnes and Noble and you ask them for the floral arranging section. It would be fun just to bring home 5 or 6 books, sit on your floor with your kids and just say, what flowers are interesting to you? Which ones look beautiful to you? Which ones are seasonal to where I live? It could be fun. That's another one. I could combine beauty with foraging, because that could be fun for you to do a foraging trip, a local foraging trip with your kids to forage for wildflowers.
Definitely. It also gets to this idea of flow and the right we have to get into flow. You know, I interview maybe 100 amazing women on this podcast, and many of them frequently talk about their capacity for multitasking. I'm a horrible multitasker, and I actually hate multitasking.
Thank God.
So hearing that there were downsides to multitasking, also there's oppression within the idea that women should be good at multitasking. Seeing that in your book was kind of a relief to me, because I find when I'm a mother and I'm fully present with my kids, that's where I want to be. And when I'm working at work, I want to be in my state of flow for work. You've presented these unicorn spaces as spaces where we must be in flow. Can you talk about motherhood and flow and why it's so important?
Liz, I honestly feel like the word multitasking is as bad as the word guilt and shame. I think it has allowed us to take pride in things that we shouldn't take pride in. And I will say that you asked me earlier about times in my life where I started to get to consciousness. One of the most triggering days in my Fair Play research was sitting down with a neuroscientist, one of the top in the world. And he was willing to sit down with me when I asked him, are women better multitaskers? Because that was my toxic time message, that somehow that was a superpower. And he looked at me and he said, better multitaskers? Do you mean from a neuroscience perspective or from a cultural perspective? And I'm like, I'm not asking about women's culture and feminism. I'm asking about the neurobiology behind it. And he looked at me and said, no, there's no gendered difference in the brain for how people multitask. He's like, but culturally, if I could convince you that you're better at wiping asses and doing dishes, how great for my flow state and my leisure time and my ability to tinker and create and ideate, because that's what he does. He's a researcher. And when you're a researcher, he says you absolutely cannot have interruptions. You have to protect your time. So yes, the opposite of that pride in the patriarchy, I'll call it, is the idea of uninterrupted attention. Attention is a weapon. It's a weapon that the powers that be know that we have, and keeping people small that are marginalized, like women, people of color, out of attention is how people stay in power. I can't have attention, Liz, with my kids thinking I'm a good multitasker. I can't have the best ideas in the world if I don't protect my attention. I can't find attention if I'm starving. And for years, I was starving, trying to be some version of my body that it didn't want to be. So that is something very powerful. Often it's taken by white men and said, duh, of course we need flow states. You just need two uninterrupted days a week, right? No, it doesn't happen like that for women. We have to reclaim it. We have to recognize that our weapon, our most important weapon, our most important power is wrapped up in how we pay attention. And that is a flow state. A flow state is an uninterrupted attention for something that makes you come alive, that you love.
I want to talk about one more concept here, which is the idea of flexibility. And I actually call it the idea of flexibility. There is a real downside to mothers having flexible careers. And I know I've lived that. Why is flexibility that sort of double-edged sword for women?
Well, it's extremely dangerous if you're living in a pre-consciousness world of thinking your time is infinite. Flexibility is fantastic if you're in a workplace where you know how to fair play. But flexibility without fair play is just a ploy for women to lose their economic power. What happens with flexibility is, I like to call it, we become the case of the 1099, right? We think we're empowered, but we end up just taking on more unpaid labor and childcare because we're closer to the home. We're the ones who picks up the phone when the school calls. Everybody needs to be flexible. Mind you, I am fighting for predictable flexibility in all workplaces so that everybody can take advantage of it. The problem is when it becomes just a woman's issue.
Exactly.
That women are the ones who take flexibility. It is linked to severe economic risk for us. And so I want you to take flexibility with a grain of salt. Flexibility is only as good as understanding that when you talk to your partner, just because my job is more flexible, I am not taking on more unpaid labor and childcare. And if you do, you make it extremely intentional, because what happens is the avalanche of unpaid labor makes your job even more flexible or not. And then you're in a place where it's worse.
It is worse because you're working more hours, but you're making less money. So you can't afford more help and you're burned out in every direction. You feel more conflicted. You feel like you're supposed to be on a work call and preschool pickup and all of the above. And that was me 10 years ago too, thinking I have to choose a flexible career because I want to be a mother. But thankfully, we're also living through this remote revolution and good things being born of this horrible crisis of the pandemic. People are reimagining, what does work look like? What does my partner's job look like? What do we want as a family? What is possible for us? How we choose to work. Also, how we choose to invest in our own well-being, like demanding and cultivating those unicorn spaces. This is a time I think especially for women's experiences and points of view to come out and to be at the center of the conversation, because we've been burdened and it's time to be unburdened. So I'm curious for you, what are your unicorn spaces?
Oh my God, I have so many now. It's like when, you know, an object in motion stays in motion, Liz, and I was an object at rest for so long. I would say the return to dance is what I talk about in the book, because that was the most fun with my cousin. And the return to dance for us has been embarrassing for our kids and really, really fun.
TikTok, right?
Yes, TikTok. We've done it just for our private friends, but we will release a video, I think, just to embarrass everybody. But the other one actually that's been percolating in my mind is my self-care is reading thrillers. I probably read every single thriller, and most of them have dead women at the middle of them. And even if women write them, they're kind of sexist. I have this dream of writing a thriller series with this genetic detective at the middle of it, because I just read about a real one in the Times. She started off as a Barbie model at Mattel, and then she became a mother and then an amateur sleuth that turned into the most important genetic detective that helps using DNA solve murders.
Wow.
And I have this idea for a murder mystery. So that's sort of where I am. I've never written a thriller. But I saw a masterclass online called How to Write Thrillers. So I thought maybe I'd sign up for that masterclass.
Well, I think you've sufficiently convinced our listeners that they need to play fair in their marriages and motherhood, their partnerships. And I know I want more unicorn spaces in my life. Well, at Motherly, we believe that motherhood brings out our superpowers. Motherhood certainly has brought a lot of incredible work out of you, but I'm curious, what is your superpower, Eve?
The clarity that I want to live a life of justice and community has been a superpower for me. The return to my values through my clarity. I'd say it's almost like that superpower of like X-ray vision into who I am. I was able to tap into that as I was writing the second book.
We're thrilled that you did. Eve Rodsky, thank you so much for joining us on the Motherly Podcast today.
Thank you, Liz.
Hey, it's Liz. Before our next segment, I want to tell you about a new podcast I've been listening to. It's called Stroller Coaster. And like this podcast, it is for parents of kids of all ages. The host is Lynn Smith, who's a news anchor for CNN and NBC, as well as a mother of two. And Lynn talks to experts, shares her personal stories, and answers questions from listeners on parenting topics they care about the most. Stroller Coaster is created by Munchkin, which is on a mission to be the most loved baby brand in the world. So check out this new podcast and subscribe to Stroller Coaster today. So what's something you do that's just for fun for you?
Well, just for fun, I read books.
I love that. What kind of books are really fun for you?
I like Amelia Bedelia, Bog and Toad, and things like that.
Do you know that I used to read Amelia Bedelia?
Uh-huh.
She's so silly.
She did.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Eve Rodsky, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this week's episode. This week, I also have some really exciting news for our listeners. Motherly's launching some special episodes on the podcast feed this week. We're calling this special bonus season, This is Motherhood. And I am thrilled to turn the mic over to Joyce Brewer, an Emmy award-winning TV journalist, mom blogger, and parenting talk show host based in Atlanta. Fun fact, Joyce and I actually grew up like a mile away from each other on Long Island. Small world. The focus of these bonus episodes is on the transformation to motherhood, centering on the perspectives and lived experience of mothers of color. Joyce has some really great guests lined up to talk about the issues, including the increased number of Black and Brown stay-at-home moms, what it means to raise a multicultural family, and how to advocate for yourself with your OBGYN while pregnant and postpartum. We'll also be back next Thursday with another amazing guest on the regularly scheduled Motherly Podcast. You won't want to miss that one either. We would love it if you spread the word about our podcast. So if you can, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It takes about 30 seconds, but it really helps other mothers discover our show. The Motherly Podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett with audio editing from Seaplane Armada. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thanks so much for listening.